Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hello, and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me, as usual, is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hey, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. You know, we're here in the offseason. Just had a somewhat crazy free agency period. I think there's some more dominoes to fall with maybe Damian Lillard or James Harden or whatever. But I think we are in now kind of the more customary portion of the slow offseason. So it's our time, you know, dig into NBA history, find some fun stuff. And I think we got a fun one coming up here.
Yeah, this is where we shine usually. The off seasons where we able to stretch our legs out a little bit.
Yeah,
it's our time to fill the gap with weird stuff about history and weird things that we're going to dig into. And I like this episode a lot because obviously one of the biggest things of this particular off season was the San Antonio Spurs getting the number one overall pick, and everybody knew who they were going to pick from day. I mean, everybody just knew once it was one of those lotteries where if you win the lottery, you are drafting this guy, and it's Victor Wembanyama. And that was, we've had a bunch of those, but not, it feels like it's not always as set in. I mean, you have like obviously your LeBron one. That was like the most clear, like, all right, this team is going to draft LeBron or whatever. It does feel like we haven't had one of those in a while, though. So it was kind of fun to go back to the, like, we're going to do the preview for the lottery, but we're basically just going to say the team that wins this is going to draft Wemby. So let's just, you know, get on with it and just discuss it from that standpoint. But that got us thinking about this episode and international first overall picks. And I was thinking, man, there's probably a lot. There's probably less than you think there is, but there are more than you think there are in recent history. Does that make sense?
Yes. I'll go with that.
Like all time, I was like, oh, that's not a very long list. And I'm like, oh my God, half of these are in like the last decade. So this is, it makes it a little bit interesting from that standpoint, as it was like a large gap where, you know, nobody was international, number one overall picks and really international players in general, you know, were very rare. And now we're in an era where not only are international picks taken very, very early in the draft, as we're going to talk about here, but they keep winning every MVP. Like they're the best players in the league, international players. And we'll see where Wemby falls in that, and you know, if he's going to be an immediate success, long-term success, where he's going to be in the pecking order here. But good opportunity to dig into some international first-round picks, or first overall picks, I should say.
Yeah,
not all first-round picks. That would be a very long show. Yeah. All right. 1999. All right. Victor Kriappa. Jason, tell me about Victor Kriappa.
Not a lot, but that would be a long show. This one, we'll touch on all of them. Some of them, you know, like Tim Duncan. We've said a lot about Tim Duncan. We're not going to go in depth on Tim Duncan, but you know, Michael Thompson, Andrew Bogut, Anthony Bennett. You know, some of the guys we wouldn't normally dive into in other episodes. We're going to go a little bit deep in here, so should be a fun mix of names to go into.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, we start with the aforementioned Michael Thompson. In 1978, he was drafted by the Portland Trail Blazers. Just had come off a championship season, and hey, they get the number one overall pick. They get Michael Thompson coming from the Bahamas. His career stats, 13.7 points per game, 7.4 rebounds per game, 935 games played, so long career, 15.7 PER. And known best for, well, you know, he's kind of Klay Thompson's lovable, corny dad on Twitter, always saying funny things. Also has been a longtime radio broadcaster for the Lakers, where he played late in his career. And here's a good question. Did he meet expectations? So we're going to ask this for all of our picks here. And so I would like to decide who is the number one pick who exactly met expectations. So for me, and we can maybe disagree on this, Michael Thompson, not quite, never an all-star, but had a pretty good career, an important piece of the 80s Lakers two title win teams, but not quite what you would expect out of a number one pick.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree. I don't think he, number one overall pick has that connotation, which is, fair or unfair. There are so many that have become, all-time legendary players, the best that have ever played the game, so that kind of skews it. But, by and large, the majority of them don't end up being that, because the majority of people who play in the NBA don't end up being the greatest players of all time. But the fact that there are your LeBrons, your Magic Johnson, your Shaquille O'Neals, your Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's, those types were the number one overall pick. I don't want to say that you go into a draft. I guess you go into a draft hoping you're going to get one of those guys. I don't know if you go into a draft thinking you're going to get one of those guys. I think every team probably hopes and prays that, Purvis Ellison is going to be as good as Magic Johnson or whatever. It didn't quite happen for a never nervous Purvis. But it's an interesting discussion of where, how to rank, what meeting expectations are for the number one overall pick. I would say probably Michael Thompson did not. But it does bring up an interesting, because he did have a very long and very fruitful NBA career, but just not to the level that maybe, the next year Magic Johnson got picked. And it's like, okay, yeah, right. that is meeting expectations there.
Yeah. So do you have to be a Hall of Famer to meet expectations, or can you be like a, multiple time All-Star, very, very good player, but not quite a Hall of Famer, and still what's the bottom tier you can reach?
Would say somebody that I look at is 1982, James Worthy was number one overall pick. Now, James Worthy is not one of the greatest players to ever play basketball. He's not Magic Johnson. He's not LeBron James. He's not Shaquille O'Neal. He's not Hakeem Olajuwon. He's not, those sort of guys. But a solid as hell player. If you're going to be able to get a James Worthy with the number one overall pick, you're probably happy with it. And the fact that he got picked by the Lakers, stuck with the Lakers forever, helped them win titles. Maybe it wasn't the key cog, but I think if you get a James Worthy type, you're happy with it. Okay with that.
Now, in fairness, James Worthy is a top 75 all-time player. And probably if he had not played for the Lakers and had landed on the Bullets and had played his career for the Bullets, that may not have happened. But but yeah, no, I think that's about the right level. I mean, I would think maybe just the almost Hall of Famer, but not quite there, a Mark Aguirre, Elton Brand, maybe somebody like John Wall or Blake Griffin, who have had really good careers but are probably not Hall of Famers. That's probably about where I would say Garrett Coleman. That's not a bad spot. Danny Manning. Those are kind of the guys who I would say.
Manning was the guy I was thinking of as you were describing that. I was Danny Manning. Who was we got Danny Manning with the number one overall pick, and we're the Clippers, so of course we fucked it up and didn't make the most out of it. But they're the Clippers. If you drafted Danny Manning, it's all right, he's not Chris Webber or Shaquille O'Neal. Or, one of these guys that would come and get drafted in the next couple of years after that, or David Robinson the year before. But, man, we're pretty happy with it. I mean, we got good in a perfect world, if you weren't the Clippers, you would have gotten a very, very good run out of Danny Manning for a decade plus. And that's fine. For a number one overall pick, I think that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, some of that's injuries. I mean, just considering just production of when they played and not, necessarily factoring in injuries that would have limited them. Yeah, I think that's about the right
Never level. MVP level, not a Hall of Famer, not going to be the best player on a team that wins a title, but a solid as hell guy that you can have.
Yeah, maybe, three All-Star appearances, maybe one or once or twice on the All-NBA, 13 level. That's about, I think, a fair expectation for a healthy number one overpick. So, okay, fair enough.
We'll call it the Danny Manning line. We're going Danny Manning? I'm fine with that. If you want to agree with Danny Manning, I'll do that.
Danny Manning, I don't know, Larry Johnson line? I don't know. Well, all right. I think you're sold on Danny Manning.
I like Danny Manning. I think Larry Johnson at least had higher highs, where he was a marketable dynamo, for a little bit.
That's
there.
That's true.
Where Danny Manning was just a dude in the league that played pretty well. Yeah. And I like Danny Manning, but
he's the guy Hawks fans hate because he got traded for Dominique Gap. So,
Not his fault.
All right. So some fun facts about Michael Thompson. He was fourth in win shares in his draft class behind Larry Bird, Maurice Cheeks, and Reggie Theus. It's kind of a surprise there for Reggie Theus.
I would have never thought Reggie Theus.
Right. He was good for a while. He and his son, Clay, are one of five father-son duos to win NBA titles, and he's one of two duos who both have two-plus rings. So Matt Gukas Sr. and Jr. have them in 1947 and 1967. Rick Barry and Brent Barry. Rick had it in 75. Brent had it in 2005 and 2007 with the Spurs. Bill Walton in 1977 and 1986 with Luke Walton in 2009, 2010, and Gary Payton in 2006 and Gary Payton II in 2022 with the Warriors. So Michael's two sons are also pro athletes. Trace is a baseball player. I think he plays for the Dodgers. And Michael, who has an E, it's same as Michael, M-I-C-H-A-L. Michael, his son, is M-Y-C-H-E-L, briefly played for the Cavs. While on the Lakers, he also played at the same time with three other number one picks, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic Johnson, and James Worthy.
Those Lakers.
Only time that's ever happened.
Lucky
assholes. So there was a sort of fun, I guess, story about like so early in Clay's career when he was about 23, he got into a fight during the Warriors during a Warriors Pacers game in which he was fined by the league, but also his parents fined him as well because when he was 23 years old, he did not have access to his own money. All his checks were paid to his parents who took care of his accounts to make sure that his financial situation was set up for his post-career. And so he taught his son a lesson by fining him personally. So that's kind of fun.
And see, it worked out because now Clay just like sits on boats with his dog. he's like, I bought a boat and I have a dog and that's fine. The rest of it, I'm stocking away.
That's all the responsibility you need. He was recruited to play, of course, he was from the Bahamas. He was recruited to play high school ball as a junior and senior at Miami Jackson Senior High School, which he was part of a lineup featuring three other Bahamians and a Cuban. They won, they beat their opponents by an average of 30 points per game, going undefeated and winning the class state championship. Unfortunately, the title was rescinded because there were four key ineligible players with falsified birth records. So a little scandal that he had in high school. And then some fun stories from breaks of the game. Said that he invented and spread a false rumor that he was David Thompson's cousin. It's sort of an attempt to raise his own cachet. Apparently, he did actually change the spelling of his name from the traditional Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, to the less traditional M-Y-C-H-A-L. And then also has a story of as a rookie after a tough loss, nonetheless, he snuck two of his lady friends aboard the bus back to the hotel, impressing his teammates with his audacity. So,
there you go. Classic.
There you go. Yes. Classic. Classic Michael.
All right. So a few other ones that we're going to go, I think just real quickly, I'll do two, Jason, then you want to do Tim Duncan here. I'll do these quick. These are like people that we have talked about for many other episodes because they are, you know, legendary players in the history. We're not going to focus on those guys. 1984, Hakeem Olajuwon, drafted by the Houston Rockets, home country, Nigeria. Career stats, 21.8 points per game, 11.1 rebounds per game, 1,238 games played, 23.6 PR, one-time MVP, two-time finals MVP, two titles, 12-time All-NBA, six-time All-NBA first team, known best for, of course, the Dream Shake and destroying David Robinson the year that David Robinson won the MVP and not him, and also just generally being awesome. Hakeem Olajuwon, for sure. Did he meet expectations? Yeah, God, yes, very much yes. So. Yeah. Did Hakeem Olajuwon meet expectations? So, obviously nicknamed the Dream. He rewarded the Rockets playing 17 of his 18-year career in Houston, of course, the 1 year with the Toronto Raptors. His span with the Rockets, of course, included leading the team to two championships, earning finals MVP both those times, league MVP in 1994, and he was inducted in the Hall of Fame in 2008. And if you do want to go back in our archives, we do have a very fun episode where we dig into Hakeem and the Rockets' championships and just how close Hakeem got to being traded as well, requesting a trade, wanting to be out of Houston, pretty much over it. They were over it. It felt like it was all going to end, and then they were like, all right, can we just try this like one more time? And then they hired Rudy Tomjanovich, and then everything went well for the next several years for Houston. But it is kind of funny how close it came to him, you know, departing and not being, you know, maybe looked at as finally as a member of the Houston Rockets, but ended up working out just fine for him and the Rockets. And then in 1985, Patrick Ewing, drafted out of Jamaica by the New York Knicks. Career stats, 21 points per game, 9.8 rebounds per game, 1,183 games, 21 PER, seven-time All-NBA, one-time All-NBA first team, known for being, you know, among the greatest Knicks of all time. And did he meet expectations? I would say, and I guess you bring up a pretty, you know, good question in our notes here. It kind of depends on who you ask, because he came in with the expectations that he was going to be the best player that's ever played basketball. Like, he came in as a gigantic college star, everybody was like, this dude is going to be the best ever. He gets drafted by the Knicks in New York. And it's like, oh my God, look at this. Like, just the aura and the expectations around him were nuts. Did he meet those lofty expectations? I don't know if he met those, but I mean, it's hard to really call somebody, you know, who was top 10 in their decade a disappointment. He never won a ring. He never won an MVP. He was all NBA, you know, first team, you know, one time. I don't know. I'd say he did. I would say he absolutely did meet expectations. But I guess if you were one of those people that expected him to be like the greatest player of all time, maybe he didn't. But I don't know. That's a tough thing to put on somebody.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, he was kind of like the next Bill Russell, but with a better offensive game was the idea when he came in. And because people thought he would have that defensive impact, and obviously he was a great defensive player, did not have the impact that Bill Russell had. But yeah, I mean, he's clearly above the Danny Manning line. So clearly, yes, he met expectations, but yeah, just given how lofty they were, that's the only thing that gives a little bit of a caveat. But absolutely, any reasonable expectations, he had a great career.
Absolutely. So, of course, he got taken first overall. He played more than 1,000 games for the Knicks over the course of his 17 years in the league. We are not going to mention the other teams that he played for because we don't need to, and it's a bad memory to put in it. We're not going to say it. He was named an All-Star in 11 of those seasons as well on his peak. As you mentioned, he was able to kind of, you know, a much more refined offensive game than a Bill Russell. Averaged over 24 points and 11 rebounds per game for a stretch of his career, and of course was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2008 for Patrick Ewing.
So which is more disgusting to see, Patrick Ewing on the Sonics or Patrick Ewing on the Magic?
I feel like the Magic, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Because they had the star uniform. The Sonic, it was bad too because they had their horrible uniforms.
Yeah, they had the red ones.
So you see like a sweaty, kind of overweight Patrick Ewing in these like red Sonic uniforms. You're like, what is this? Yeah. I hate it. But I think the star jerseys, the star Orlando, because they're like, they have that slick like sheen to them or whatever. And I don't know. And he's got so many knee pads on. It's just
that's
so
a
sad.
Lot of knee pads. He has like six knee pads on for some reason.
I hate them both. I don't want to think about them anymore. So
okay. All right. So Tim Duncan is next. So, okay, what is the uniform? If Tim Duncan had decided, you know what, I'm going to play for a different team than the Spurs for like the last year of his career, what would be the worst place what's the worst uniform that you can imagine on Tim Duncan?
Bobcats, for sure.
Well, I mean,
It goes without saying.
Right, okay.
Non-Bobcats division?
Who existed? Who existed at the time he retired?
They were gone. They were gone.
Yeah, imagine a 2017 season.
Oh, 2017. I feel like the Kings.
Oh, okay.
Right, like that.
I was going to go with the Thunder, but
the Thunder. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's pretty good too.
Timberwolves. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of some pathetic Eastern Conference team.
Brooklyn Nets. Is that?
That would have looked okay. You know, I think visually, because at least it would have looked similar.
That's true.
Like he needs to be in like a completely different color. You know, honestly, like the Hornets would have been like him and Tony Parker like being on the Hornets together. That would have been just like, oh no. They're both here. Why are they both here? Go away.
All right. So Tim Duncan, 1997, drafted by and played his entire career with San Antonio Spurs. His home country is the U.S. Virgin Islands. So the U.S. Virgin Islands are a U.S. territory, similar to Puerto Rico. People born there are U.S. citizens, but they don't vote in presidential elections, don't vote, have a voting representation in Congress. So they are, by the NBA standards, he's considered an international player. Mm-hmm. So, 19 points per game, 10.8 rebounds per game, 3 assists per game, 24.2 PER, played in 1,392 games. He was a 2-time MVP, 3-time Finals MVP, 5 titles, and 15 times on the All-NBA list. He was best known for, of course, 5 rings, being boring, but not really actually boring as we've dove into a long retrospective of his career. He actually was an interesting guy who was thought to be a little boring, kind of like Jokic, I think, in some ways. Best power forward ever, you know, by most metrics, certainly very much in the conversation for that. And did he meet expectations? Yeah, I would say that he definitely met expectations. Yeah, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2020. You know, was great pretty much the entire course of his career. Kind of played a little bit less as he got older, but still was among the was in the top 10 for the vast majority of his career.
Yeah, considered like an NBA ready guy from day one, and pretty much was right. Like the day he started. I mean, we did a show about that. When he retired or whatever, it's like day one, he was just like, oh, yeah, I'm great. And it's like, oh, okay. And yeah. It's just like, I mean, from that point forward, it was like, oh, all right, cool. Like, we're good.
Best player on a title winner in his second season, and best player in a title winner in his, like, third to last season. Yeah. So, but third to last season was close. I mean, probably Kawhi was the best player, but, you know, he was very, very, it was kind of neck and neck at that
point. Still in that conversation, which is pretty damn awesome. The number one pick. So, not going to be upset about that one. One that you might be a little upset about, 1998, the following year. The Los Angeles Clippers have the number one overall pick, and they go back to Nigeria, just like Hakeem Olajuwon, thinking, all right, we got the next Hakeem Olajuwon here.
Yeah.
We have Michael Olowokandi, and did not quite happen there. Career stats, 8.3 points per game, 6.8 rebounds per game, 500 games, 10.7 PER for Michael Olowokandi, known best for probably being among the worst number one overall picks of his era, at least. Maybe not ever. I think there's some other ones that have kind of beaten him out forever in recent years. But did he meet expectations? Absolutely not. He stuck around, probably played a little bit longer and a little bit better than he has the reputation for. But it was just that, like, it just never clicked with him, and it just never seemed like it was going to click with him. And there's like a brief little periods here and there in his career where it's like, oh, wait, hold on a minute. Maybe we got something. And then it just didn't happen. So he did not meet expectations. I mean, he definitely did not pass the Danny Manning limit. No. And certainly not a who you want out of the number one overall pick, but has a very legendary story, though, like a true legendary story, where he starts taking up basketball at age 20. He was at a boarding school in England when he decided to come to America to try to play basketball. He calls a few colleges. They either don't answer or return his calls, or they say, well, yeah, you can come, but you got to, you know, pay, you know, you got to do this, you got to do that. And he's like, yeah, it doesn't all the way in that. So he ends up kind of just like looking through a phone book to find universities, ends up at the University of the Pacific. And it's lunchtime in California, so nobody normally would be manning the phones in this small little university or whatever. But in this case, assistant coach Tony Markopoulos, I believe is how you pronounce it, was there to take his call. And Pacific coach Bob Thompson, his famous quote about the situation later, was that you always have to have somebody manning the phones because you never know when a seven-footer might call.
Never know.
In this case, they did. And they said, well, we don't really have any scholarships for you, but you can come play if you want. And Olowokandi says, well, my family's kind of wealthy, so I can pay my way if you'll let me come. And they said, sure. seven-footer, you'll pay your way to come to school? Sure, let's give it a try. And Olowokandi called. And it's the best call he ever made. It's the best call that Pacific ever took. He played sparingly his sophomore and junior year as they're pretty much just trying to teach this guy how to play basketball. And then they unleash him on the NCAA, and he delivers big in his junior year with averages of 22.2 points per game, 11.1 rebounds per game, and comes in the league. He's a very intriguing prospect, considered at worst the number one or the number two overall pick by pretty much everybody. It was pretty much either him or Mike Bibby. As people were talking about him. And while there were questions about his game, people were wowed by the size and the strength. He entered the league with an NBA-ready body and won without many miles on it, too, which was a big thing. That's like, okay, a lot of big men have been playing basketball their entire lives, you know, so they're bound to have foot injuries. They're bound to have leg injuries. This guy just started playing, you know, a couple years ago. So he's got a lot more miles left in the tank, presumably. And he's at a pre-draft workout. Fellow NBA player at that time, Andrew Lang, I think he had maybe one or two more years left in the league, says he's got some of the quickest feet I've ever seen, and he learns in a hurry. And with that body, he's going to be an all-star for a long, long time. No, he was not.
Not so much. No.
He was not so much. They drafted him number one overall, and he never lived up to expectations. I don't think I would call him a bust necessarily. He was never that good, but he did play 9 years in the NBA, played 500 games. You know, it does beg the question, because his career had been a little different if he wasn't drafted by, you know, the Clippers. And, you know, they didn't have a great run of developing prospects. Could his career have been different if he wasn't drafted during the NBA lockout as well? Because he gets drafted and then basically they say, OK, you can't come to team facilities. We can't talk to you until this thing's done. So he gets drafted and then basically has, you know, 6 months to kind of, you know, mess around and just do whatever. And not necessarily that he got like out of shape or whatever, but that maybe hurt as well for a guy that just didn't play that much NBA basketball. But you know, he played in exactly 500 games, spent a decade in the NBA spread out against three teams. His most productive years came when he was drafted, as he averaged 9.9 points, 8 rebounds per game on his 5 years in Los Angeles. They, of course, you know, the Clippers famously drafted Olowokandi. Then they hired Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to be a bit of the Olowokandi whisperer and see if, you know, they could get into his head and train him to be great. Yeah. It did not last long. Kareem would later say, talented but uncoachable about Olowokandi. Played for the Timberwolves and the Celtics, ended his career in 2007. Had one good year that actually got him paid pretty well. Stunningly received 0.003 points in the All-NBA team voting shares in 2002. Wow. So I don't know who that was. Down ballot vote for Michael Olowokandi there. And then scored at a career high 30 points and perhaps his all-time best game at March 8th, 2002. 30 points, 16 rebounds, and a Clippers 94-90 win. Jason, over my Chicago Bulls, and you want a better thing? I was there. I saw the Olowokandi game. I was there for this. My friend has a signed poster signed by Olowokandi as well. I have asked him to find it. I've texted him. I will let you know if I hear back. I am guessing it did not make it through the next 20 years or whatever, 2002. Yeah, I don't think it lasted in his parents' garage for the next years. But I forget what the sign was. It was something about the Bulls, and then we were just like waiting by the tunnel, and then Olowokandi came by and signed it, and we're like, oh, all right, great. Nice. But then he was great. He had a great game, man.
That's a hell of a game. Yeah,
hell of a game for him. Yeah, had a career high 20 rebounds, which he did three times as well. Did it December 8th, 1999, December 29th, 2001, and November 3rd, 2022. And this is funny. Never once made a three-pointer, not a one, not a single one. But to be fair, he never took one either, not even a full court. The shot clock's done. Never took a three-pointer in his entire career. Never made one, never took one.
Never missed a three-pointer.
Yeah, exactly. So, never missed a three-pointer.
Yeah, you can't miss the shots that you don't take.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what he wrote on his his bulletin board, which maybe spoke to a little bit more of his outlook on life and the NBA. But that is Michael Olowokandi. So then we go a couple more years here to 2002.
One thing I want to point out about Olowokandi. You talk about worst draft picks ever. So I will say, making a strong case in terms of the worst draft pick ever. So he, over his career, has negative 8.5 value over replacement. The second worst is negative 1.4 with LaRue Martin and, Kwame Brown and Anthony Bennett are right there. That's like the difference between the difference between Michael Olowokandi and LaRue Martin is like the difference between LaRue Martin and Austin Carr in terms of career. So that's like you think of like the difference between Michael Olowokandi and LaRue Martin is like a whole Austin Carr better, if that makes any level of sense, which it probably doesn't, but.
No,
but
yeah. I got you. Yeah, that's a bad name to bring up.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think like it's mostly because like the longevity. And I think like he started off horribly and then, as you mentioned, did get a bit better. I mean, never got good, but became sort of like okay-ish.
Yeah,
like
he had that 1 year where it was like, oh, okay. Yeah. And he got paid a lot. I mean, in free agency, people were like, oh, God, he figured it out. We got to pay him. Right. We got to do this. Yeah. And he opted to re-sign with the Clippers. But like the Spurs had talked about getting him. A lot of big-time teams were like, no, dude, with this, now he's figured it out. He's got it. Let's go. And then, of course, he got that money, and then it was just like, oh, he's the same guy. Okay, never mind.
Yeah. If he'd have been drafted like fifth, I don't think anyone would have ever thought about it. Yeah. And it'd have just been like, whatever it happens.
Now we go on a new guy, Yao Ming here, 2002, home country of China, drafted by the Houston Rockets. Career stats, 19 points per game, 9.2 rebounds per game, 486 games. Less games than Michael Olowokandi, actually, believe it or not.
Yeah, right.
23 PR, five-time All-NBA in seven seasons. Known, of course, for being the first Chinese star in the NBA, being 7'6". The Yao Yo commercials is how I always remember Yao Ming.
Sure.
Forget what credit card company it was, but insert credit card company here. They can sponsor us, I guess, if they need it. That would be great, by the way, if they sponsored us. So credit card company here. I'll do that later in post when I'll send them this episode and say, here's a great opportunity for you guys. Hone in on your 2002 ad campaign about Yao Ming. You can do it here again. Did he meet expectations? Yeah, absolutely. Outside of the career longevity, outside of, only playing 486 games, he absolutely met expectations and earned all-star honors in each of his eight seasons he played. Became obviously a staple in Houston, spent his entire career there, retired in 2011 after injuries began to plague the back end of his career, and he was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2016. So now some fun facts, and I'm using fun in quotes, that just kind of give you an idea of the what was going on at the time and the turmoil going on with him coming to the league, is that he was originally slated to be in the 1999 NBA draft. So the deputy GM of the Shanghai Sharks basically forced him to enter the draft and made him sign an agreement that he would be his agent, and he would get 33% of all of Yao's earnings. Needless to say, somebody said, that doesn't seem totally fair. And Yao got out of that, didn't have to join the draft in 1999 when he was definitely not ready. And this agent was not able to sign a deal where he got 33% of his earnings. On the other hand, though, somebody else got a lot of his earnings. Another fun fact in quotes here is that when he entered the draft in 2002, the Chinese government at the time that this was happening, because Wang Zhuzhu was also in the league, and they were saying, "Oh crap, we're starting to get some players in this NBA thing. We got to figure out something. You know, we got to figure out a system here." So they set forth this kind of bylaw that anybody that was going to be a Chinese NBA player would have to turn over half of their NBA earnings to the government, as well as the Chinese Basketball Association as well. So that happened with Yao. It happened with eventually with Wang Zhuzhu as well. And speaking of him, another not that fun fact. Then we're getting to fun facts, I promise. Wang Zhuzhu was of the Mavericks at that time. The Chinese national team was like, "All right, you can come back and play with us." And he was like, "Nope, I'm not coming back. I'm out. I'm never coming back to China." So then the team signed a thing that Yao was forced to play with the Chinese national team after he got drafted by the NBA, and then also stipulated that they wanted him to go to the Houston Rockets due to the large Chinese population, the idea that they were going to be able to market him a little bit better in Houston, and stipulated that he would not go to the U.S. unless the Houston Rockets drafted him first overall. They didn't want a third overall pick on whichever team. They wanted Yao Ming, number one overall pick, Houston Rockets, so that they said he would not be able to go unless that was the case. Well, of course, he did become that. Houston picks him number one, first overall, becomes the first international player to be selected number one overall without ever playing U.S. college basketball as well. Charles Barkley, when he got drafted, famously said he would kiss Kenny Smith's ass if Yao Ming scored more than 19 points in one of his games as a rookie. And then on November 17th, not that long into his career, he scored 20 points in a game. And to take a page out of very late era World Championship Wrestling, I know, Jason, you'll get this, yeah, and 1% sure of the people listening to this will get this. Yeah. Kenny Smith, instead of actually making Charles Barkley kiss his ass, made him kiss his ass by bringing in a donkey into the studio, and Charles Barkley then kissed the donkey. So
probably better result for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's Dusty Rhodes and Jeff Jarrett.
Jarrett, right?
Yep. So there you go. Yao would score 19 plus 16 times that season. So that's a lot of ass kissing for Charles Barkley, including a season high 30 points against the Mavericks on November 21st, 2002. But he finished only second in Rookie of the Year behind Amari Stoudemire, who had a great, great rookie year. So no slouch to Yao Ming there, but Amari Stoudemire had a great year. And Yao, obviously extremely healthy his first 3 years in the league, kept improving. The Rockets got good too. They made the playoffs in both 2004 and 2005. They signed Tracy McGrady. It felt like, oh my God, here we go. And Yao finishes the 2005 season with averages of 18.3 points per game, 8.4 rebounds per game. Feels like it's like, man, this is working out. This is great. Of course, then he just couldn't stay healthy. His feet abandoned him, his back abandoned him, and his body just did not work out very well. He did, though, in 2007, average a career high 25 points per game. It was so good, but only played 48 games and then missed all of the 2010 season. Plays only 5 games in 2011 before finally calling it quits and saying, yeah, I'm done here. He then got a degree in economics after his playing career, graduating in 2018. And this is probably the most famous fun fact about Yao Ming. People know about this, know this about him right now. In 2016, he opened a winery called Yao Family Wines in Napa Valley, and it is American wine critic Robert M. Parker Jr. of The Wine Advocate gave Yao's wine rankings of 96 points.
Wow.
And says, quote, "I'm aware of all the arguments that major celebrities lending their names to wines is generally a formula for mediocrity, but the two Cabernets are actually brilliant, and the reserve bottling ranks alongside just about anything made in Napa." Look at that. Wow. High praise for Yao Family Wines.
I did not know about the Yao Family Wines.
I didn't either, and I've been to Napa Valley. Yeah. I should have changed my plan when I went there.
Yeah, yeah. Next time.
Drinking this other crap from these random Italian people. What am I doing with these random Italian people? I should have gone to Yao Family.
We'll make it part of the Over and Back road trip.
Yes, when we go to, what's his name's?
We go to the bed and breakfast?
Yeah, who is that?
I
keep thinking Dick Stockton. I know it's not Dick Stockton. And I don't want to hang out with Dick Stockton.
Dick Motta,
that's right. Yes, I don't know why I keep saying Dick.
Yeah. I mean, I'll hang out with Dick Stockton too. just avoid golf talk, that's all.
right.
All right. So do you know how many NBA players were born in China? How many in history?
I'm going to say, I don't think it's very long. I'm going to say 7.
You are correct. Wow, that is exactly right. So
don't ask me to name all of them. Wang Zhuzhu, Yao Ming, what was the one guy's? Man, he played on the, I don't know how I got, I'll be honest, it was shot in the dark. Don't give me too much. Oh, yeah, Yang Zhiji. Yeah, I know Yang Zhiji. God, there was the one guy who played on the Rockets, too. I don't know. Yeah. Jeremy Lin, obviously. of course.
Oh, well, Jeremy Lin wasn't born in China. Chinese. Yeah, he's obviously Chinese American, but he was not born in China. So yeah, the seven. So one is Tom Macheri, who
I always forget. Right,
obviously would not to. And then there's Menke Patir, Wang Zhiji, Sun Yu played one game, and then Yao and Yi Jinlan and Zhao Kui, who
that's
played
the guy. Yeah, he's
two
the Rockets
games.
Guy.
Okay,
yeah,
two plays for the Rockets. Okay, yeah. I had not heard of him. So
yeah, nah, he was like
played 19 games for the in the NBA for two seasons, ending in 2019. So been a while since we had a Chinese.
Yeah, and there was a good run for a while. I mean, if people don't remember, I mean, like Wang Zhiji was good, Yao was good, and Yi was solid too.
He was a good prospect. Yeah, yes. he didn't quite work out.
So now if he came into the NBA now, like, because that guy was 7 foot and really good at outside shots.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, the mid 2010s or whatever, the early 2010s. Yeah. And they were like, get down there. You're 7 foot. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I'm good at threes. Like, let me take threes. And that was kind of the same way too. Like, he was really good at an outside shot, but like, obviously at that time it was like, get in there and bang with Shaq. And it's like, or I could just be out here and shoot three. They're like, no, that's not going to work. Get out there. So it's funny how a lot of those guys, I think, would have a very different, career these days. Oh, Wang Zhiji, though, he was a banger down low, if I remember correctly, Menge Batir was as well. So, but it's been a while. Yeah, what it felt like that was like, oh no, the Chinese invasion, here they are, and then it's been kind of a slow, since then. So we'll see if anybody new comes up soon. Support for Over and Back is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below the waist grooming. Their products are precision engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped Performance Package is the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 8 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer just for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code OVERBACK at manscaped.com. Again, that's 20% off plus free shipping worldwide with the code OVERBACK at manscaped.com. If my math is correct, that's about 16 million balls who trust Manscaped. And this, Performance Package 4.0 is a game changer. Inside this package, you will find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, Performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold your goodies. First of all, that Lawnmower 4.0, the future of grooming. Dare we say, the greatest ball trimmer ever. Their fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. Thanks to their advanced skin safe technology, the Lawnmower 4.0 is also waterproof and has a 4000K LED spotlight that is just going to give you that much more precise shave. Because this trimmer is waterproof, you can say goodbye to the mess on the bathroom floor as well. You thought that was good, but you want to take your grooming game even further to the next level. Well, don't worry, because the Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Weed Whacker nose and ear hair trimmer. This is also waterproof and provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps reduce nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate nose holes. The Crop Preserver ball deodorant and Crop Reviver ball toner will change the way you approach your hygiene routine. Trust me when I say this, fellas, your balls well, thank you. Manscaped is even going to throw in, again, two free gifts in that Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. You can bring your comfort and your boxers to another level. So it's time to take care of yourself. Go to manscaped.com and get 20% off plus free shipping worldwide with that code OVERBACK. Again, that's 20% off free shipping with the code OVERBACK at manscaped.com. One more time, that's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. And make sure you use that promo code OVERBACK to get 20% off plus free shipping. Code OVERBACK one more time. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. We thank them, of course, for sponsoring this show. All right, back to it. But one more for me here. Andrew Bogut, 2005, drafted out of Australia by the Milwaukee Bucks. Career stats, 9.6 points per game, 8.7 rebounds per game, 706 games, 16.4 PR, one-time All-NBA team, and then one ring with the 2015 Warriors, of course. Obviously a much, much better player, but interesting at the, per-game stats between him and Olu Kandy, not that much different. Olu Kandy's 8.3 points per game, 6.8 rebounds per game. Andrew Bogut is 9.6 points per game, 8.7 rebounds per game. So it's like, and he played 200 more games, and obviously he, had, better overall years, but it is kind of funny that, overall, they're not that much different. And known best for, well, I guess is tweeting these days, which he does very prolifically, and weirdly and bad. And there you go. That's probably how he's known to a generation. But yeah, I don't know.
Pizzagate going on.
He loves the Pizzagate. More solid than spectacular, I'd say, in terms of did he meet expectations. He was an important piece of the early Warriors dynasty. He was solid with the Bucks, but never like he would have been had his career not. I think the last half of his career kind of just fell completely off, where he was just like a dude on rosters.
He had that hand injury too. Like that changed kind of the trajectory of his career. He was like more of a star before that, and then was more of a role player after.
Exactly. Yeah, he fell down and his like entire wrist just it's a bad injury. Yeah. I don't want to look at it at all ever again. Yeah. But yeah, so because like when he was on the Bucks, like I remember going to some of those games, and it was like, yeah, this dude's got it. And then there was a year where it felt like he was going to become a thing, and then obviously that wrist injury happened, that hand injury, and then it was like, okay, yeah, this guy's. And then he just kind of became a role guy and a decent role guy for a bunch of years. But did he meet expectations? I don't know. I'd put him probably on the. Maybe no, but he's right on that line there. Right on the line. I could be swayed one way or another.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Quickly, though, first Australian player drafted first overall. Obviously, was in 700 games, started over 600 of them. Led the league in blocks in 2011, helped the Warriors win their first title of what would become the dynasty, obviously, in 2015. Pretty much known for, we talked about with Yao Ming, where it was like, oh, here it comes. Here's all the Chinese players. And that didn't actually happen. But with Bogut, it did actually unlock the Australian NBA connection. And they credit him with revitalizing Australia's NBL as well, because then players were like, oh, hold on a minute. I can make it to the NBA. I can make it to the highest of highs. And NBL is now thriving. And the Australian NBA connection is thriving, too. There's a lot of Australian players in the NBA these days. And they do well internationally. Like they're a great international team. As well. And of the guys in his draft class, only Chris Paul, Lou Williams, CJ Miles, and Marvin Williams have longer careers in the NBA than Bogut, who lasted 14 years in the NBA. Now, Jason.
Yes.
A brief fun fact for you.
All right, hit me.
Did you know that Marvin Williams, as you, the resident Atlanta Hawks fan, super fan.
Sure.
Did you know that Marvin Williams is number two among 2015 draftees in total points scored in the NBA?
I did not know that, but wow, how fantastic.
Vindication for all of you that were like, oh, yeah. Marvin Williams, come on. That's a terrible pick. Not true.
No.
Now, that's with good. That said, are you done celebrating? Because I got to knock you down a peg here.
Oh, okay.
He has 11,626 points behind number one, Chris Paul. So he did score 11,000 less points than Chris Paul did, but...
Yeah, he can
still
catch
number
up.
Two.
He can come out of retirement and catch up. Yeah, it's possible.
Right,
yeah.
If Chris. Right.
Yeah,
Chris's career is winding down.
If he just averages 50 points a game for like three seasons, he'll be good. That's fine. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
I mean, he's perfect for today's NBA. So.
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, he's not in today's NBA.
Well, maybe he'll come back. It's possible.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. We don't know that. The time is ripe. The time is ripe for him to finally turn the worm in the narrative against him and Chris Paul.
He's only been out of the league for 3 years. I'm
yeah. Because as Chris Paul's trajectory is going down now.
Right.
It's Marvin time, baby. So
it is Marvin time. Yeah. He's just been waiting in the weeds. So.
Right.
Yes.
We're not counting a big three numbers do not count in this case. So I don't know. I don't know if he's in the big three. He seems like a guy that would be in the big three, but I don't know if he is or not. But those points scored do not count towards the NBA total. So
at this point, we should look at that maybe. Yeah.
Only David Lee and Marcin Gortat have more career rebounds in the draft class of Bogut. But he has top 10 in the draft class in both box score plus minus and value over replacement player. And it can be argued that he is one of the keys to the Warriors dynasty. And this is a big key here, because the Warriors traded Monta Ellis, as well as Kwame Brown and FK Udo, to the Bucks for Bogut and Steven Jackson. And that essentially was, we don't need Monta Ellis anymore. We're going to give runway to Steph Curry. We're going to play him more minutes. He's going to get more shots. And the logjam at the position was removed. And Steph Curry was unlaunched on the world. So thank you, Andrew Bogut. The real reason the dynasty happened is because Andrew Bogut got traded for Monta Ellis. So there you go. Made $118 million in his career and is also a conspiracy nut job who believes in Pizzagate and has all sort of dumb COVID thoughts still to this day. His profile says, at Instagram throttles this account. Follow me on at Twitter. Same username. So
okay.
Yes.
No problem. There's no
throttling
problem. Throttling
his account on Instagram.
Yeah.
So luckily... Right. He's on Twitter, where they don't throttle any accounts except for every account, because it's not working anymore. thank God.
Marvin Williams does not appear to be part of the Big Three, at least not currently.
Maybe
spend some time there. So Joe Johnson's still going, though, strong in the Big Three. So it's going to be the Big Three Hall of Famer, probably, based on that. So, Yes. So speaking of, well, not Hall of Famers, but speaking of, I don't know, the next player we're going to talk about, Andrea Bargnani, 2006, was drafted by the Toronto Raptors from Italy. Career stats, 14.3 points per game, 4.6 rebounds, 550 games, 14.4 PER. Probably known best for, yeah, there was the trade that sent him to the Knicks, which was considered an absolute fleecing at the time. And though retrospect, I don't know if it was quite that much of a disaster, but basically was traded by the Raptors to the Knicks for Marcus Camby, Steve Novak, a 2 second round picks, and a 2016 first round pick that ended up being Jakob Poeltl, which, you know, that means,
yeah, that's not as bad. Player. Yeah, that's, yeah. At the time it felt like worse because all those
more,
draft
it was
picks,
more process than result, I guess. But yeah, but yes, it
was more why are you trading all of these players for Bargnani? Right. Like, you don't probably need to do that.
Yeah. So and did he meet expectations? I would say no. But there was a time like around 2011, 2012, where he looked like he might figure it out. He averaged like 20.8 points per game on 53% true shooting, 5.3 rebounds, 16.9 PER. Not like big star numbers, but definitely solid, you know, borderline all-star type level. Like, he kind of looked like he might become a guy, and then he just fell off the next year and never regained that form. But some fun facts, he was 12th in win shares in his draft class. LaMarcus Aldridge is number one. Kyle Lowry is number two. He is the fourth Italian-born player in NBA history. The first was Hank Biazzotti, and then Stefano Rosconi, and then Vincenzo Esposito. And since then, we've had Marco Belvedere, Danilo Gallinari, Reggie Jackson, born in Italy, which I did not know, Gigi Datome, Niccolo Melli, Nico Mannion, and Simone Fontecchio. I don't know who that is, but he's got a great name. So I'm sure that lots of fans of his are going to be upset, but he plays in the league. At least he played in the league last year. So even though Bargnani's seen as a bust, he played for the Raptors long enough to show up on some of their franchise leaderboards. He's eighth in their franchise history in minutes played, eighth in rebounds, sixth in points, sixth in blocks, ninth in fouls. So just definitely had some longevity, at least in terms of the franchise history. But kind of weirdly, after his Knicks stint, he played very briefly with the Nets and then went overseas to Spain. And I could not find anything about him since 2017. I have no idea what he is up to now. Just for somebody who is rather noteworthy, just not anything about him is sort of strange, it seems to me.
I guess good for him. That's a good way to live life. Yeah, nobody knows what you're doing. And like, you know, we can sort of achieve that like in our lives, I guess.
Right.
But like the fact that, number one overall pick and a big star in Italian basketball, a relatively well-known person in American basketball has just disappeared off the face of the earth. Presumably still alive, but just kind of hanging.
Hey, hopefully he's living a good life.
Yeah, just hanging.
Yeah.
Probably in some beautiful Italian villa, just kind of chilling. Yeah.
Just doing what he wants. Yeah. There you go. All right, next we very briefly got Kyrie Irving, 2011, drafted by the Cleveland Cavaliers. His home country is Australia. He actually relocated to the U.S. at age two. He holds dual citizenship. Career stats, 23.4 points per game, 3.9 rebounds, 5.7 assists, 22.4 PER, 671 games. He's a three-time All-NBA, eight-time All-Star, and has a championship ring. Known best for, some problematic politics. I don't know what it is with the Australians, but they've got
what's going on there.
No offense to Australia.
You guys are cool,
you guys
what's
are
going
great.
On.
just a couple things. So, did he meet expectations? Yes, but he loved to try to subvert.
He's really trying not to. Every year he tries not to. Yeah,
tried hard to ruin his legacy.
He's so good. But, just be good at basketball. Just
I mean, you can be like weird in a fun way. Just don't be weird in like a toxic way, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, you guys know about Kyrie. We don't really say anything more about Kyrie. So next we got Anthony Bennett, also drafted by the Cleveland Cavaliers in 2013. The Cavs just kept getting number one picks. And his home country was Canada. His career stats, 4.4 points per game, 3.1 rebounds, 10.2 PER, 151 games, known for probably being the worst number one pick in NBA history. Probably pretty much between him and Ola Candy. And you could also argue LaRue Martin. Those are kind of the three common, like, worst, you know.
For sure. That they are a little ahead of, like, the Purvis Ellisons of the world and that sort of stuff. Like,
right.
Yeah, I think that that's probably the list there. Larue Martin, Anthony Bennett, Olo Candy is probably the list.
Yeah, if you'll put Greg Oden on that, but Greg Oden was like injuries. No. Like that was exactly. Like, he was productive when he played, you know.
And like Joe Barry Carroll, who ended up having a long career.
Fine career, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so, but I don't think any of those guys are really in that discussion.
No, I agree. He's got to be. And these numbers are, look for a barf bag. Because some pretty bad numbers are coming up here. So if you have a sensitive stomach, you might want to step away.
All right. Yeah, I'll let you know when you come back. Yeah, so compared to all the number one overall picks since 1965, which was the end of the territorial pick era, he is last in box score plus minus at -4.0, PR at 10.2, points per game at 4.4, assists per game at 0.5, minutes played 1905, which actually includes Greg Oden and the number one pick from 2023, Paolo Banchero. So
yeah, the idea that the guy drafted last year is out of the league
faster than anybody else in terms of minutes played and field goal percentage 39.2. So no, he's ranked 39th in win shares for his draft class. Giannis is number one. Rudy Gobert is number two. He was part of the trade along with fellow Canadian number one pick Andrew Wiggins that sent Kevin Love to Cleveland. Played for four teams: Cleveland, Minnesota, Toronto, and Brooklyn. Also at contracts with Phoenix in 2017 and Houston in 2019, but never played for those teams. He's played in the G League, Turkey, Israel, Puerto Rico, and Taiwan since 2017. He's only 30 years old. And 2017, he's playing in Taiwan now, looking like he's smashing the Taiwan League. He looks like he's having fun there. He's destroying those guys. Yeah, I think Dwight Howard played in that same league for a little while.
Yeah, yeah. So I would love to do that, man. I'd forego the NBA and just go there and just score 30 a game and be like, this is great.
Yeah, yeah. I love averaging 40-20. It's fun. Yeah,
right. That's fun as hell.
Now, in fairness to Bennett, like the 2013 lottery did not work out particularly for anyone. So we got Anthony Bennett first. We got Oladipo second to Orlando, which, you know, injuries. But I mean, he was fine, but definitely fell short of expectations. Otto Porter Jr., who became like a good like role player later.
Just a guy.
Cody Zeller was fourth. Alex Len was fifth. Nerlens Noel was sixth. Ben McLemore was seventh. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was eighth. He probably met expectations. You know, Trey Burke was ninth. C.J. McCollum was 10th. He was good. Michael Carter-Williams was 11th. Stephen Adams was 12th. So he ended up, of course, okay. Kelly Olynyk was 13th. Shabazz Muhammad was 14th. So, a couple solid guys in there, but definitely not a stout draft bust. Giannis at 15th.
Now we got a guy, but the rest of these dudes are just, you know, C.J. McCollum probably the best of that pack there in terms of like reaching, you know, semi-star level other than Giannis, of course. But yeah, the rest of those guys either just solid rotation dudes or guys that were just out of the league like pretty quickly or guys that are hanging around in the peripheries of the league now. Still kind of kicking. I got Stephen Adams, obviously had a good career. Michael Carter Williams was rookie of the year, but it was kind of a sham rookie of the year.
It was
on the process Sixers, and they were like, well, someone's got to score, so it's you. Yeah, go out there.
Yeah.
Help us lose as many games as possible, sir. And then, you know, every other year after that, it wasn't as good for him. So
All right, so wrapping up, we're talking about guys who are obviously still active in the league. So
we don't need to go through the history of these guys because you know them because you're watching them, hopefully.
Yeah, but got Andrew Wiggins, who's drafted by the Cavs in 2014. His home country is Canada. 19.1 points per game, 4.5 rebounds per game, 14.8 PER, one All-Star, one ring, known best for. I don't know, what is Andrew Wiggins known best for? That is
At this point, I don't know. I guess adding another half of his career with the Warriors there.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll see how this Warriors thing ends. Like, you know, maybe he'll take on a bigger role as some of the other guys are starting to pull back a little bit, but probably not. I don't know what he's known for. Yeah. In 20 years, I don't know what we'll know Andrew Wiggins for other than like,
I mean, there was Maple Jordan nickname, which is a good nickname, but he's nowhere near that good of a player.
No.
So
I would say he did not live up to that nickname. No, I don't know. No. Yeah. That's a great question. What is Andrew Wiggins known for? I don't know.
Right. And did he meet expectations is another one. It's like, well, like he had good like box score numbers, like good, like, you know, he scored lots, but there was kind of like empty calories. But like now his stint with the Warriors, he's become more a complete player and part of a championship team. And, you know, the rebounding is really important to them. So Yeah, it's kind of weird. He also made an All-Star game, but it was kind of a weird, like, just kind of like a stuffing the votes. But he is like a pretty good player, so yeah, I don't know.
It was one of those weird ones. They're like, congratulations, everybody knows this is a sham. And he's like, oh, man, all right. Like, I'm sure he did, too. But, it's one of those things where you're like, oh, no, I don't need to be a starter. I'm not an All-Star starter, man. What's going on here? But you know, on. It happened.
It happens. All right, we got Ben Simmons next. Philadelphia 76ers 2016, also from Australia.
Yeah, what are you guys doing over here? Yeah. Why are you all so weird?
Right. 14.7 points per game, 7.8 rebounds, 7.5 assists, 19.1 PBR, one-time All-NBA, two-time All-Defensive, and three-time All-Star. Known best for his problematic
shooting
stats. No, not yet. No politics. Not yet. No problematic politics that we know about.
Can't shoot and is really weird.
Yeah, it's been weird about, like, just being playing like, basketball. Yeah, I actually don't really want to play.
Playing
much,
basketball. You know? Yeah, he's weird. He's an NBA player that doesn't really
and
play
he
basketball
started off
that
really
much.
Good. He started off great. Like, he's great, on court impact right away was really good. Like, yeah, the shooting was always a little bit of a problem, but he was so great in every other area that it didn't really matter. And then, the playoff series against the Hawks happened. And since then, he just had that chaotic ex Philly. Things have been weird in with Brooklyn, and who knows how that's going to hurt. I mean, he's still young enough and still like could turn around and be like just kind of, even if he like ends up kind of just being the player he was and doesn't even figure out the shooting, he does so much else well that like he can still be, he's never going to be like your big star, but he can still be like a important player on your team. But
yeah,
for
sure. Yeah, at one point he just got like he didn't want to go to the free throw line anymore, and he was a guy who like in his early career was like, yeah, I can't shoot threes, but I can drive and I can do all this sort of stuff. And if I get fouled, like I'm not a great free throw shooter, but like it's okay, I'll hit 60% of my free throws, it'll be fine. And somewhere along the line, he didn't want to get fouled anymore, and it's like, okay, well, so you don't shoot, you don't want to get fouled, and you don't cut. It's like it's really hard to figure out what to do. And you're a great, a good defender and a very good passer, and it's like, it's pretty hard though. You got to be able to, you have to shoot or drive or do something. But then now it's play. Now it's like just play. How about you try playing? And it's just, very, very strange. Yeah, he'll be known for a very odd career eventually.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Maybe it's one run, you never know. And last, we got DeAndre Ayton, 2018, drafted by the Phoenix Suns. His home country is Bahamas. His career stats, 16.7 points per game, 10.4 rebounds, 20.5 PR. Probably known best for always being on the trading block, I think, at this point, although it looks like he's not going to be traded. Looks like they're going to really need him because they don't really have anyone else to do big guy stuff.
No.
So probably pretty important here. Did he meet expectations? It's kind of like a too soon to tell, but he was a key player on a finals team at a young age, and they're probably going to be a championship contender for at least a little while, so he'll have a big role in that. So if he does well
max,
there, it certainly
he got
does.
Paid max money too. It's like I know the league, and the contracts are kind of weird, but I'd say if you're you drafted number one overall pick and you end up paying that guy max money to stay on your team, like
I mean, other than certainly Doncic and arguably Trae Young, who's better in that draft class than he has been. That's probably that's a good sign. Yeah. I mean, he's averaged double double in each of his five seasons and definitely could be he'll be very important because he'll need to do the things that basically no one else is going to be doing for their team because everyone else is going to be shooting. So if he's okay with just a rebounding and defense and putbacks, I think he'll be totally fine.
Yep. Unfortunately, it does not seem like he's okay with that, so that might be a problem, but we'll see,
We'll see how it goes.
See what ends up happening with DeAndre Ayton and the Phoenix.
Maybe he and Ben Simmons can be traded for each other. We'll see.
Great. Love it.
Yeah. All right.
Actually, I don't love that at all. That sounds terrible for Phoenix. Yeah.
All right.
There you go.
All right. Cool. All right.
And Victor. Victor. You don't want to explain to Victor, do you?
I think Victor. Yeah, we'll talk about Victor later. Yeah. Victor just going to the Suns. We'll see. Well, has he met expectations? Well, not yet. What's happened?
No. Come on. I saw some footage from his practice, and I don't know.
I don't know.
Looks slow.
He didn't make every shot in his intro video, so I don't know.
Right. I don't know.
It could be a problem.
Yeah. He's already not. They're already saying he's not going to play all of summer league. It's like, question starting.
We'll see. All right. Well, thanks everyone for checking us out. You can, of course, you can find us at The Step Back. You can find us at overandbacknba.com. All of our old episodes on there. We're available on social media platforms, Twitter, as long as it exists, and Facebook at overandbacknba. We might be joining some new ones soon. Be on the lookout for that. And you can find us wherever podcasts are played. Just leave us a rating and review if you like what we're doing, and we would appreciate it. So thanks again for listening. We're back again soon.